Around the world, in every city and town, lurks the unexplained, the impossible, the feeling that tingles the back of your neck. You ask, what is in the shadows? These are the thoughts that man has asked for centuries. Sit back as we delve in the shadows with your host, Jeremy Ryder.
Welcome to the Ghost Society Presents In the Shadows. I am your host, Jeremy Ryder. Along with me in the studio today is my co-host with the most, Matt Worthington.
Hello, everybody.
And we're back after a hiatus. You could almost say it was a Destination Truth type of hiatus.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we were gone for almost a year, and we're back.
Has it really been that long?
It's been a while.
Oh, man.
It's been a while.
Long overdue.
Definitely. Just give you a little highlights. If you followed our podcast in the past, and we are mostly educational, focusing on the quote-unquote haunting aspect of the paranormal, because we do a lot of paranormal investigating as a group with that. You can check out more about us on www.thegsny.com, and you can contact us via our contact page there, if you wish. We also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/ghostsociety. And you can follow our regular updates there, and we're also on Twitter. So that's what the Ghost Society as itself does. We really, Matt and I got discussing, and we wanted to kind of broaden our horizon in the aspect of the paranormal. So we thought, why not bring in the other subjects like UFOs, cryptozoology, of course hauntings, you know, listener stories, things like this.
There's so much to paranormal other than just haunting aspects. Paranormal can really just go on forever in such a wide range.
Exactly. So, and that's what we hope to do with In the Shadows Radio here, is broaden those aspects. So today's show is going to be about modern UFO studies. It's going to be the first in a two-part series on the controversial and riveting study of UFOs, and we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll get into our first segment, and we'll go from there. Welcome back, and we're going to get right into our first segment here. We'll start off with MUFON, which is the Mutual UFO Network. They have a large database that tracks a lot of UFO sightings. We were hoping that our guest today would have been Kathy Keene. She's a local director of MUFON here in Central New York. But unfortunately, she is under the weather. However, they do keep a large database, not just here in New York, but across the country and the world.
Yeah, they're one of the largest. They're one of the largest, like, independent UFO investigation groups. It's just, it's nationally, it's internationally, it's all over.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they got a great website out there. You can Google MUFON, and that'll take you right to their site. It's open membership. You can apply. There are field investigations. They have you go through a training session and then meet up with your local directors, regional directors, that sort of thing, and go from there. But modern UFOs, I guess, I hate using the one that's always been battered around, but it all really started with, like, Roswell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
The crash at Roswell. There were a few other big noted sightings and debris and everything, and one of them was in Puget Sound, to where the UFO was flying over, spewing out debris, actually killed the guy's dog, injured the son, broke his arm, and all these fragments were all over in the bay. And History Channel's UFO hunters actually went up there and tried to recover debris. They came up inconclusive with that, but they followed the tracks of a B-52 that was sent up to recover the material and everything like this and fly it back. And it had a mysterious malfunction to where it burnt right through the fuselage and crashed. And two pilots who were also attached to the information departments died in that plane crash. And they found the crash site, did readings there. Of course, with the terrain and everything that they ran into, ground-penetrating radar was inconclusive. but they took some of the material back to a lab, were able to show that this material could have, in fact, ignited the aluminum, which has a very low heat point anyway.
And they never actually really stated what the actual material was.
Right. They just said it had magnetic properties that interfered with the relays that were all through those planes at that time. And that's what caused the ignition and, unfortunately, the loss of life.
And my question is what kind of a metal alloy just sitting on its own can melt through aluminum? And if it was part of any kind of a craft, count me out. I'm not riding in that craft, you know?
I don't know. I think it'd be cool. I mean, obviously, there must be safeguards in it. You don't know if, because of the malfunction that this supposed craft had, that it caused it to eject the material, if that's what in turn turned this metal so high in magnetic properties and caustic properties. It could be that normally it's inert, you know, it doesn't have these type of properties.
Exactly.
But it's very compelling. In the study of paranormal, probably UFOs and cryptozoology has more evidence behind it than hauntings ever will.
Oh, I agree. I'll agree there.
Yeah, I mean, hauntings, we get EVPs, such like that. UFOs, you get physical evidence of them being there. Whether it be through radiation readings, you know, burn marks, scorch marks. Many people documented it in the sighting. The Rendlesham Forest there is a perfect example of multiple witnesses, very credible witnesses. So these are things that you got to keep in mind with modern UFO study. But also, you know, the investigative techniques that are being taken place. Now, there's many amateur UFO hunters out there. Obviously, there is no professionals in that field
can't be
either.
No professionals.
That taken into mind. And they have some very sound investigative techniques. MUFON has some in a manual that I was able to get of theirs, which would be page 8 on the manual there.
Let's see here. Oh, yeah. Right here, the MUFON Field Investigators Manual and the Code of Ethics. That is our page 8.
Yeah. So, I mean, they take it into degrees. They have many different factors in that. To where they grade the evidence available, be it a grade 1 up to a grade 5. They also go from different angles. They take different readings. They have a STAR team that is, they're basically almost like an emergency response team. You know, they're the first ones out there if possible. But also the DOD itself investigates these UFO sightings. Mm-hmm.
Well, they want to make sure everybody's educated in basically what is real and what is not.
Yeah. And with DOD, they did Project Blue Book, which was done by the Air Force. So they looked into it. Obviously, these people are highly trained in investigation technique. So, I mean, there's a lot of it that goes towards that, that says, well, if our own government, and not just our governments across the world.
If our own government is going to spend enough money to make something like a Project Blue Book, which is still running today, you know, they'll look into things as every government would, but if they don't find any reason to keep pushing it, they don't. Obviously, there's a reason here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, officially they ended in the 70s, but everyone kind of knows that it's still ongoing. They just put a different label to it now. There's Project Absalon, which is attached to it.
Same thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, the UK, they are the first government that's really come out and said, yes, we have a continuing UFO department investigating these things. And there's been many documents released over that. And I happen to have a few. You can search for them online, then you can download them in PDF. Or attend one of their local conferences, and then they'll hand it over then. So that's just a portion of the techniques. So today's theories. What could be some of the theories? Well, some of it is that our own government took these crashes, took their technology, retroed it to work with our technology, and what we're seeing in the skies is our own government craft.
It's our own government craft and our own testing.
Right. Which, there is some credence to that. The SR-71 Blackbird was one of those that used to be reported as a UFO. The F-117, our stealth bomber, you know, those are examples of craft. And our own Air Force and everything did try to make their own UFOs. I mean, this is highly documented.
Oh, yeah.
So you can always look that up online also. Or talk to a local representative.
Anyone to tell me that our own government doesn't have special crafts that they keep secretive from the rest of the world or our actual, you know, the people of the United States. The U.S. government has these. They have military aircraft that they don't want us to know about because that's the whole point of it being secretive stealth craft.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's for national defense. So, I mean, it's just makes sense. You know, you got to keep some things from a possible foreign nation, you know, so we have the upper hand in technology.
Exactly.
The other theories is, obviously, it's extraterrestrial in nature. And we'll dive into that theory more in our next series.
There's a possibility. There's a lot of people out there that believe, just like with the paranormal, for spirits or ghosts, interdimensional.
Exactly. Interdimensional beings is another good theory. And the way that these craft act and the speed and angles that they can take, you know, regular G-force would crush a physical body.
Exactly.
You know, maybe they have something technology-wise and negate the G-force. We don't know. You know, but that's just a couple of the theories. I mean, there's very many. Time slip is another thing. You know, absolutely. Time travel. What we're actually seeing and thinking is extraterrestrial
is actually ourselves
visiting ourselves in the past, kind of like a duck blind, in a sense. But they're not really trying to make themselves hidden all that much. So, these are the popular theories out there. Everyone has their own conclusion to draw. You know. It would be very arrogant of us as a species to think that we're the only ones in the universe. Doesn't necessarily mean that it is extraterrestrials, but until we get that...
There's no possible way we're the only ones in the universe.
Well, no.
Take all the sand on the beach, and all the sand on the beach is every grain of sand being a galaxy, and in that galaxy there's planets and moons and suns, and you're telling me we're the only grain of sand on that beach?
Well, I mean, look at what they've concluded with Mars already, that it did have water. There was microbiological organisms.
There's moons of Jupiter that have ice covering it, and there's cracks in the ice where we can visibly see water underneath. If there's water underneath, then the planet's not as cold as we thought it would, which means there's an internal heat source. And when you have heat, when you have water,
these are just a couple of the building blocks that mainstream science has said.
We've, over just the last few years, dived into the deepest parts of our own ocean where there is no sunlight penetrable, and we have found heat ducts, tubes and chutes coming from the bottom of the ocean where life thrives without the sun's photosynthesis around those ducts.
Yeah.
I mean, life thrives around them. So if life can thrive without sunlight, which we thought in the past was not possible, could it thrive underneath that ocean with an internal heat source just to keep the water from freezing? There could be life.
Well, even the toxic black smokers. I mean, those toxic black smokers, there's plenty of life right around those that we wouldn't think would be able to survive because it's such a harsh and toxic environment.
Exactly.
But yet... But
life will find a way.
Yeah. So, I mean, these are just a tidbit of the proverbial iceberg and what we can find. Our own Antarctica here on the planet, they discovered a huge ocean underneath.
Mm-hmm.
They found microbiological organisms under there. There's possibility of even further life in that ocean in Antarctica. So, and Antarctica is going to really come into focus on our next show also, and our next show will be about ancient alien theory. So there's a lot more to this scope than even really two shows can cover, but
oh, I know,
we got a lot of other shows planned also that I really want to dive into too, and we can always bounce back and forth. So we'll wrap up this segment. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the source materials that you can get into. Also, we'll be talking about the possibility of abductions. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to our next segment here. We're going to be talking about source materials for the topics that we've been talking about. And also the possibility of abductions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a couple of the source materials that we used today were Ministry of Defense releases that were declassified. Talking about RFA Woodbridge, RFA Bentwaters from July 23rd, 96. We're also talking about the report that John Lear released in December 29th of 87. And John Lear is the founder of Learjet.
Yeah.
And he talks about also how General James H. Doolittle inspected a saucer crash in 1946 that crashed in Spitzbergen, Sweden. And also how Germany recovered a saucer in, as far back as 1939, which is way before the Roswell incident.
Yeah.
In more modern times, we were using reports, audio transcripts by NASA from both the Gemini, Mercury, and Apollo missions. Even Apollo 11, which in 1969, you know, they landed on the moon and everything, they had a lot of transcripts of seeing unidentifiable objects in the sky. Even on the way to the moon. And it wasn't just Apollo 11. We're talking about all the other Apollo missions at the time, too, all reported seeing the same things. Now, a lot of skeptics can say, well, this was debris used from the cast-off rockets, you know, from the boosters and mm-hmm. everything like this. Yes, a lot of that was ruled out by NASA, but a lot of it could not be explained either. And some of those unexplainable events did make it into Project Blue Book, which was released publicly.
Mm-hmm.
But,
you know, you could say that it's debris, but a lot of these astronauts describe the it producing its own light source, the directions that some of this moved, the speeds some of this moved at.
Yes.
There was a lot of different factors onto why they strongly believed. I mean, these are smart guys.
Yeah.
Our government chose these people to go into space.
Yeah.
I think they know the difference between space trash and something that...
Well, they also are aware of the optical illusion that can be cast from cockpit.
They're trained for this.
You know, the refraction through the glass or, you know, whatever material that they used mm-hmm. from this, you know, they can tell that difference between the panes and everything like this. I mean, a lot of these guys used to be fighter pilots or test pilots also. So, I mean, they're used to these observations. And a lot of them had degrees. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very smart.
They're trained in the aerodynamics.
Exactly. So, you know, was it just their imagination? We have no physical evidence that we can take back. However, you know, being that these were credible witnesses, and some of them to this day stick by their stories.
Yeah.
You know, with no deviation, you gotta believe these guys. I mean, they didn't make movies like Apollo 13 and The Right Stuff for nothing. You know, these guys were heroes. So, that being said, there's also very other credible witnesses when we're leading into our next topic, which is abductions. Probably the most famous one was Betty and Barney Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Betty and Barney Hill. They were a mixed-race couple, you know, back in the 50s, that started the modern-day abduction theories. Recently, as of a couple of years ago, they did another enzyme test and DNA test on Betty's dress that she had always kept from the initial incident of her abduction, and they're still unable to identify the enzymes.
But with today's modern technology, that shouldn't be the factor.
No. I mean, we're getting to the point where we can sequence a full genome of different animals and possibly humans within the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're able to identify singular genes. So, it's not an easy task.
A simple enzyme, we would think.
Yeah, exactly. Another very famous one, and he's never changed his account whatsoever, is Travis Walton. Most famous for the Fire in the Sky movie that was made about him. And he's released his own book detailing his account and regulations of that. Again, UFO hunters also followed up on Travis Walton, and he took them to the exact spot to where he was abducted, and he was still visibly emotionally shaken from being there. And you can Google Travis Walton again, the specifics. We're not going to go over those now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we've talked to people, you know, during investigations and stuff like this, into hauntings, this is. And, you know, they'll mention encounters with UFOs. One person is talked about being abducted. So, you get to take it all in with a grain of salt at the time, but you look back at it afterwards and you try to piece the puzzle together, and you got to wonder. You know, Jane Grant from Ghost Hunters, they put in one of their books, you know, that they had went to a case to where they thought it was just a haunting, and they said that there was evidence of aliens. Now, again, you get to take it with a grain of salt because they are para-celebrities and such, and they were writing a book, things like this, but you wouldn't think that they would put something like that into a book and everyone's just going to go, well, we were just interested about the ghost, now I'm going to throw this book away. They just ruined it for me.
Yeah.
Type of thing. I'll admit, I was one of those. I read the book and I'm like, what the hell are these guys talking about? And it totally ruined my enjoyment of the book. But, you know, you look back at it now and you're like, geez, how much of it that we experienced was what we thought it was? We have no idea.
We don't know.
A lot of theories have been going around in the paranormal community, not just about UFOs and cryptids and such, but that they're all interlinked at some point. You can usually look at a place where there's been high reportings of hauntings and also see reports of cryptids being viewed and UFOs being viewed in an area. Is there a correlation? We have no idea. But you got to wonder, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you gotta think about it. There, being the paranormal, there's more actual evidence. I think we were discussing this earlier. There's more actual evidence of paranormal, of cryptids, even though they are, you know, cryptids for a reason. It's far and few the evidence you get on anything like that. But there is actually more evidence of that, and there is more evidence of UFOs than there is in the paranormal field. But yet the paranormal field is the one that takes high priority over everything.
And a lot of people say, well, that's because it's the modern fad nowadays.
It's the modern fad. Well, it's only the modern fad because of obscene and, you know, many television shows that push it as the fad.
Exactly. I mean, look how many shows have been out there about ghost hunting. I mean, obviously you got Ghost Hunters, you got Ghost Adventures, you had Ghost Lab, you got
The Haunted Collector, you got Dead Files, you got The Haunting, you got the
Celebrity
the
Haunted, Ghost Stories.
Celebrity Ghost Stories. You've got so much. They even have a new one now I was watching last night on television. A Haunting of, and then ... And Regis Philbin was on there. It was a whole hour dedicated to Regis Philbin telling about a story of a house that he moved into a long time ago, and he had a psychic come in along with a healer, and, you know, it's just gotten to the point where everybody's jumping on board with this.
Yeah, he had Paranormal State, he had the spinoff of Paranormal State, which focused on Chip Coffey, and now his was more the psychic thing.
Yeah.
But Psychic Kids. So, you had, like, one show about psychics, but you had all these ones about hauntings. And even Chip's show kind of focused in on the haunting aspect of it. It wasn't just that these kids had psychic ability. And then you have, for UFOs, you had three series. You had Ancient Aliens.
Yeah.
You had Sci-Fi's attempt at UFO Hunters, which it was named UFO Hunters. And then you had History Channel's UFO Hunters. Sci-Fi has only lasted two episodes. UFO Hunters on Sci-Fi, on History Channel went 4 seasons. Well, now you got Chasing UFOs, which has Aaron Ryder in it.
Well, these shows are on when? They're at night?
Yeah.
And at night, you could flip through the channels on any given night, and I can see 5 or 6 different shows about paranormal with ghosts on at the same time as, like, 2 of these shows about UFOs. With today's modern fad, everybody's going to switch to the channel with the paranormal. And I think that we're really losing focus on one of the longest-standing, fields. It's been around for even longer than Roswell. People have been reporting UFOs for thousands of years. Look at Ancient Aliens. The technology back then, we can't even fathom on how it was possible.
Right.
It's one of those things, it's like we're losing touch with it. I mean, it's one of those things, take a moment some night and just look up at the sky. Bet you forgot it was even there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're all looking down. We're looking at our smartphones now.
Yeah.
We're looking at our computer screens, TV. You know, we got a bunch of other things that'll take us out of our natural environment.
Yeah.
We're getting further and further away from nature.
I think we're losing touch with the field of, like, UFOs or cryptozoology, you know. And, like you were talking earlier on how where there's paranormal cases of ghosts, you often find high levels of crypto and UFOs. Like the theory that Bigfoot, Sasquatch himself, some people believe the reason he's so elusive is the fact that maybe it is extraterrestrial itself.
It's a possibility.
Maybe Bigfoot is extraterrestrial, and the reason we can't find him is because they're not here all the time. I was watching reading, actually, something about that the other night, and it was, you know, I'll take that over the modern-day ghost shows that they have every day. Not saying because the Ghost Society is its main priority and dedication with the Ghost Society is to watch, or not to watch, but to, you know, study the field of the paranormal and the aspect of the haunting side. But we, as paranormal investigators, we're paranormal investigators. We're not ghost hunters.
Exactly.
Keep our eyes open into all the fields of paranormal, which include cryptozoology, UFOs.
Well, often when we're doing our research for a case or anything like that, or just research into the haunting aspect itself, you delve into the science side of it, which a lot of it leads towards the UFO side also. You can branch off that way or into the cryptozoology side. I mean, just the fact of, like, research on string theory for a possible interdimensional thing.
Uh-huh.
That's just one example. And there's plenty. You get into the genetics, you get into the geography and everything like this, and, you know, earth science. You can boil it down to earth science if you really wanted to. That's just the possibility.
You can boil it down to logic to where people just need to really get back to the basics and open their mind a little freer.
Because
there's things around us all over on any given day or night, that are being lost and forgotten about.
Yeah.
And, you know,
perfect example, Rolling Hills, with the lady screaming.
Oh, yeah.
We demunk it down to a fox.
People, if you have a moment, anytime, go to any internet web page or YouTube or viral video and type in a fox screaming. Play that side by side back to one of the popular ghost shows of a woman screaming in that building. They were like, oh, did you just hear a woman scream? Put it side by side to a fox. Not only when we investigated the area, we saw dead foxes in the road, but we even spoke with the owners, and she's, because it's a high habitat in that area for fox population, she said, oh, I see foxes all the time. I just never see them in the building. It doesn't mean one's not screaming in the field right next to you. You sit on an abandoned four corners surrounded by fields and woods.
And here's the tie-in. Now, she's just selling tours on this building for the haunting aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But what did she say on the tour when we were going into the one laundry room, what used to be a laundry room? Through this window,
Stacy and I just happened to see one night while we were right here a UFO so large that came down, it covered this window. Mind you, this window was about, the wall was about 20, 30 feet long, and the windows were probably 10 by 10. So this lady's literally telling me that she saw a UFO come down so close that it parked itself in front of these windows and blocked the windows out. That's in the field of UFO investigating, that is the holy grail of the next step next to alien abduction.
Yeah.
That's literally you sitting on your front porch having a barbecue and a UFO comes down and lands on your deck with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when you're out to the restroom, too, she mistook Venus for...
She mistook Venus that night for a UFO, and she said it's been sitting still in the sky right there for the last 4 hours and hasn't moved. Well, that glowing light and the color of it and the way it's located by the constellation, another investigator and I told her that that's Venus. And she said, well, I don't think so. You know, there's no open mind there.
Because she had presupposed, because she said that she saw a lot of UFOs around the place.
Exactly.
Again, you know, you get that tie-in report.
You're tying UFOs in with haunting.
I mean, all she would have needed is Chupacabra or Bigfoot, and she would have had the Trinity of Paranormal, basically. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, but that example aside, I mean... You gotta wonder, I mean, how many of these theories tie in together. But abduction is probably the scariest aspect of the study of UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people feel they've been violated, you know, or tortured, you know, this sort of thing.
And surprisingly, the number of people that have reported UFOs, the number of people reporting abducted by UFOs is far less. You would think that if there's a million people out there making up UFO stories, why not throw an abduction into
exactly.
it? Because it just makes your story more credible if you want to tell the story. But there's the difference. There's the classic UFO sighting, and then there's the abductions. And the abductions range far less.
Yeah. And they're not on the rise either. I mean,
no.
It's been... If you look at it on a graph, it's pretty steady. No dips, no, you know, spikes. So,
like with other fields, like the haunting aspects. All the haunting shows came out, and all of a sudden, everybody's got ghosts and everything's being haunted. But the abduction side of UFO sightings has always maintained its level, which leads me to believe that you know, lots of people may have seen a UFO, but obviously. The abduction side, I think what I'm trying to say here is maybe there's some truth behind it to where people aren't really making it up because it's not that common of an occurrence.
Yeah. I mean, like you were saying, if you're going to make up a story, why not sensationalize it with that aspect also?
But most people don't. There's
no.
Very few people that actually will tell you that, you know, I've had an abduction experience and it's a select group. Which leads me to believe they're not just out there to say, I saw a UFO.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be like people reporting, yeah, I got a haunting, but I've also been possessed.
Exactly.
But, so, I mean, that concludes today's show. Come back with us in 2 weeks. We're going to be talking about ancient aliens to continue the series. And after that, we'll be getting into Bigfoot.
And I'd like to touch a little bit more on the abduction side next time, too.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, it all ties in. It
mm-hmm.
does. I mean, even back in ancient times, they talk about the sky people taking people.
So, I know. This stuff goes back thousands of years. I mean, it's not anything new. Roswell didn't start it. Roswell just might have opened eyes to it because it was the day and age when news and publicity was just on the rise.
Exactly.
And further mass production. We now, at
exactly.
that time, had televisions, very early televisions. We had very early radio. We had newspapers that were being produced in far faster fashions.
Yep.
It's just the fact that we caught that at a time when...
It was the right place at the right time.
Right place at the right time to where media was the newest thing.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. So, again, if you want to learn more about the Ghost Society, you can go to www.dgs, thegsny.com, or you can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/ghost society, and you can see our links to Twitter there also on our main website. If you want to email us, you can email us either through the Facebook side of it, or you can email at jeremy@thegsny.com. That's J-E-R-E-M-Y @thegsny.com. So tune in with us in a couple weeks, and we'll continue the series. Thank you once again.
Thank you.